Welcome, everybody. Thank you so much for joining us. This is Ellen Kamai, the natural nurse. And as always, I'm wishing you the best. And there's so much going on at Natural Alternatives. We're giving lectures on ground all over the country. We just had one at Hippocrates Health Institute and also at Life Extension Foundation, which is in Fort Lauderdale, Florida. That was just the other night, a lot of fun. And since then, we've had three or four herbal online webinars, and those actually offer three CE broker credits for nurses, midwives, registered dietitians, nutritionists, massage therapists, and acupuncturists. So if you need any kind of continuing education credits, please check out our classes. Go to naturalnurse.com and look at events on top, or calendar is a good place to look. They're all listed there. We have several coming up through the Florida School of Holistic Living. And next week we have one on dowsing and radionics, how to use those tools to help you in your life and also help you decide in terms of herbs, how much to use, how long to soak herbs, all kinds of really great information is available for you. And we have a wonderful guest today who is truly a master herbalist. And we're going to be meeting online, of course, and through our radio show with Brigitte Mars. And you can find all her information at Brigitte, B-R-I-G-I-T-T-E, Mars, just like the planet, M-A-R-S.com. And that's a great place to look at all the many things that she has available in terms of herbalism. Brigitte is an herbalist and nutritional consultant of natural health with almost 50 years of experience. Hard to believe. I started this in 1964, so I guess it's more than 50 years. It's just amazing. She teaches herbal medicine at Naropa University and the School of Health Mastery in Iceland, and she has taught at Omega Institute, Iceland, Kripalu, Sivananda Yoga Ashram, Arise, Envision, and Unify festivals, as well as the Mayo Clinic. You can also catch Brigitte blogging for the Huffington Post and Care Too. And she's a professional member of the American Herbalist Guild and the author of an amazing array of books, such as Addiction Free Naturally, Beauty by Nature, The Country Almanac of Home Remedies, Raw's for me, and The Desktop Guide to Herbal Medicine. That's an absolutely beautiful book that she wrote. I have really all of her books on my shelf, but today we're going to talk about her latest book, which is called The Natural First Aid Handbook. So thank you so much for joining us today, Brigitte.
Good morning, Ellen. Thank you. It's wonderful to reconnect and lovely to hear your voice.
Yes, you've been on our radio show many times over the years. We started these radio shows in 1982 when radio was actually, you had to be near the station that the radio was broadcast from. Now, of course, every radio show that we do, including today's show, and I'll send you a link when we're done, later this afternoon, and anyone can listen anytime because we're live on air together now, but then it will be archived as well. So that is just, you know, it's a double-edged sword as we move into the future, but we have to take advantage of the good qualities of this new world. And what I love about your new book, as a nurse, the way they formatted this book, The Natural First Aid Handbook, is so similar to other more conventional first aid handbooks.
I love how Story took this book. It's nice, it's small, it fits in your pocket, in your glove compartment, in your first aid kit, and you can just, you know, look it up. It's a beautiful structure that they've used, and I'm really happy that I got to be the author of it.
It's really, let's say, very cute. And, you know, like I said, the way they have the rounded edges, it's just like other first aid books that mm-hmm. nurses might have. You know, we have them. We have them even in the emergency room and at the nurse's desk. In the old days, we certainly did because there was nothing online. It was just, okay, what do you do right now? And what's so great about this book, Brigitte, as I suggest, it's not a novel, so it's not where you're going into a whole bunch of, let's say, background stories like I know you do in many of your other books about each plant. But it's something that people really should read ahead of time and then have their natural medicine chest ready to go when it is an emergency.
Absolutely. And it's also really nice to know that very often we have some of these remedies in our home already, like apple cider vinegar or honey or baking soda or sea salt or cabbage, or maybe there's something in the garden. But I'm in such agreement with you, Ellen, that it's good to know what to do in an emergency, because if you don't, you might be panicked and feel that you don't even have time to read a book. But if you don't know what to do, this book will take you right to, you could do this, or you could do this, or you could do this. There's usually several options of what you might use, and hopefully your household is going to be prepared, because there's also a section on, you know, what to have in your house, what to have in your car, what to have in your purse even, because the world is a perilous place these days. It's nice to you know, be ready and be prepared to give assistance when needed.
Yeah, just a shout out about that. I live in Deerfield Beach, and the town next door to me is Parkland. So when that incident occurred with unfortunately in the school the other day, all the helicopters are flying over my house. All the ambulances are passing by my front door. I'm really right next to that really horrific occurrence. And I sure did bring out a whole bunch of natural first aid, especially homeopathic, just to share with you, things to do right in the moment because people were so hysterical. Not about the physical wounds, but about, I would say, you know, the mental incomprehension and shock.
It's true. I think a lot of hearts are broken, and there have been many reasons for hearts to be broken in the past few, I'm going to say since the eclipse last summer. It seems like it's just been crazy with hurricanes and earthquakes and volcanoes and floods and fires and killings that are so unnecessary. And so, you know, we want to do everything to help the world wake up and move into a new paradigm. We have so many blessings. We have so much technology. And so we're ready, and we want to be helpful, and we all want to be on board.
Yes, it is true. And let's go back in time, because you're talking about in your bio and over the years when we have met in person, or when I have interviewed you, I have a whole backlog of shows of yours on all different topics, and you're such a knowledgeable herbalist. There must be a time when you read through your bio and you kind of, I would say white out, but, you know, that's a little old-fashioned, but you and I did use white out in the old days.
Yes, yes.
You had to change that number from 10 years to 20 years. This is your years of experience in herbal medicine, to 30 years, to 40 years, and now your bio reflects 50 years. How does that feel to you?
Well, Ellen, as you know, it takes a long time to really get good at this. But the other good news is we're tapping into information that's often been used by millions of people for thousands of years. So that is wonderful to have that behind us, and we can't say that about the latest drug. But I did, you know, for the grace of God, you know, get interested in this as a child, and by the time I was 15 years old, I was literally the alternative practitioner at my all-girls school. Even though we had a wonderful nurse and an infirmary, a lot of the girls in my school would come to my room, and I would give them, you know, whatever I was learning about chamomile tea or rescue remedy or, you know, calcium magnesium for cramps. And I was basically just trying stuff out on my friends and seeing that this worked. But I was very, very blessed to have a French-Canadian grandmother who was a practitioner of folk medicine, and I love that she could treat so many maladies with garlic and apple cider vinegar and honey, and I knew at an early age that I want to be able to do that, and so I simply, even in high school, started turning all my school projects into an opportunity to learn more about herbs. So if I was writing a paper on French history, I would write about herbal medicine during the French Revolution or plantas medicinales de Mexico. If it was a Spanish class, I took everything I was learning and turned it into an opportunity to continue my knowledge about plants. And right now I see a lot of young people wanting to do this as a path. You know, how wonderful.
Yes, that is exciting to have apprentices, and that's a great story. And I guess a lot of us did have that beginning, because with me, my grandmother was from Greece, and she was a midwife and also a tea leaf reader, and wow, grew and used medicinal plants in her interaction with those people who came to her for those things, in terms of parenting, in terms of women's health issues, and also in terms of divination. And it seemed to be all fit together in her world. And she had 35 grandchildren, and yet I would say I was the only one who really became like her little, I don't know, pet. I followed her around and was super interested in all of that information. So sometimes, you know, where does that come from? It's hard to say. It's almost like a spiritual path that's preordained.
It's a calling. I see that. That's a beautiful story, Ellen. And, you know, I think we also have to think back, had our grandmothers lived earlier, they might have been accused for witchcraft, for reading tea leaves, because my grandmother also did that. Herbalism and midwifery were two of the things that could get you in a lot of trouble with the church.
Yeah, and don't we see that pattern, unfortunately, now with the over-regulation of herbal medicine, and now, as you probably know, homeopathy is joining that as of a couple weeks ago.
But, you know, I want everyone to know that natural medicine is the medicine for the people, and that we need to keep this alive, and natural medicine is what's good for the planet. Every time you decide to buy a bottle of Echinacea or homeopathic Arnica Montana, that somewhere there's a field of flowers that are suitable food for the bees and giving beauty to the earth and helping to oxygenate the planet. So, you know, herbal medicine helps us to be better stewards of the earth, and a healthier planet is what's needed for healthy people.
I completely agree, and I think they're walking a fine line with this overemphasis on regulation. And that's something I actually teach. I'm not happy to teach it, but for instance, let's say you have wonderful herbal apprentices, and I know you do, and they get really excited about herbal medicine, and they try to make some, like you might make in your own garden or from, you know, wild weeds that you gather, and share them with people like you and I have done, and they see fantastic results. So they go, gee, maybe for a living I should make herbal remedies and sell them. And that becomes a real sticking point, unfortunately, with the FDA.
So we want everyone to be able to take as care of themselves, too, and not only be dependent on somebody else. This is wisdom for everybody, and it's meant to be shared.
And you can make your own. You know, that's still fine as of now. And we can certainly talk about it openly in the context of education. But I really want to look at your brand-new offerings. Like, tell me about your plant app, because that looks like something I want to get.
Oh, I'm so excited about it.
I don't know what they are. Tell us about yours.
Okay, so the project is called iPlant, letter I, plant, and it's a phone app, and a lot of the information is based on my book, The Desktop Guide to Herbal Medicine. But this has wonderful pictures by Martin Wall. So let's say you find a plant. Say, oh, this is plantain. Well, you can look up, is it edible? Is it medicinal? Are there any contraindications for it? Is it safe for pregnant women? Is it safe for nursing mothers? Are there any other uses, like can it be used for fiber or soap? And it fits right in your pocket. It's a phone app. So you can look at a plant and know all the important things about it. And I work part-time in a natural pharmacy called Pharmica. And even though I've written all these books, every once in a while, someone will come in and I need to know, like, is, you know, Coptis safe during pregnancy? I'm just going to check. So I have this little thing in my pocket, and I want to share that it was two wonderful gentlemen who helped me turn this project into the technology that it is. You know, a phone app was not something that I would know how to do, but they are former Navy SEALs, and they have all kinds of skills, and they, you know how important it is to have something that you could use if you were stranded within phone range, to be able to look up, you know, can I eat this? Is this a good survival tool? So I love this app, and I'm so glad that the technology does offer this so it fits in your pocket. It's also recently become available for Android. So,
oh, that's exciting, because that's what I think. You mean for
iPhones and Android.
Now, there's another app that I've seen that probably would marry beautifully with this one, because it's more of a botanical recognition app. You can actually just take a picture of a plant, and it will bring up what plant it is, but it doesn't have the kind of information your app has. It's more
botanical identity. Yes, I have a couple of those on my phone, too, and I don't use them that often, but there's one called Leaf Snap, and I know there's one. So you just take a picture of the plant, and it'll, you know, put it into a database and whatever it is, like bipinnate leaf or toothed edges, and it'll, you know, show you the possibilities of what it might be. Of course, I think one of the best ways of identifying a plant is the flower, because their colors are so distinct, and there are a lot of leaves that look really similar. But, yes, that is a great asset to have along with iPlant. So Leaf Snap or so as we know, we can, you know, continue to learn our whole lives. I just got back from teaching in Colombia, and I did my herb walk there on the last day so I could learn as many plants from all the books that I brought. And, you know, be able to offer an herb walk on the last day. So there's always new places on the earth where herbalists just want to know all of the plants that surround them.
Well, that brings up a good question for me about your beautiful app. For instance, there's only so many plants. So are they more, what is the bioregion? Like I have a home in Arizona, very different plants, the Sonoran Desert area in Bisbee, Arizona. Mm-hmm. And then also I stay most of the time in Florida, and it's way south. So that's another whole bioregion. And then also in Oyster Bay, New York. So I know you are in Colorado. So what is the breadth and depth of the plants that you feature?
Well, the good news is that we keep adding updates to the app. So, you know, we all know that you can update your app and you'll get, you know, when you go to the App Store, notifications of things that can be updated. So we do have some desert plants in there. We do have some plants that grow by the seashore. But I would say that anyone living in Europe or the United States is going to benefit from, you know, pictures of things like plantain and malva and mullein and comfrey. But we do add plants that would be specific to different bioregions. And our intention with this phone app is every year to add, you know, more plants and include even more bioregions, like, you know, there's high mountain plants in there. So I would say, you know, having given herb walks in so many parts of the world that, you know, this is, you're going to find a lot. But it is a work in progress that we plan on continuing to add more, and you just keep adding your updates, and you'll have more plants next year.
Isn't that exciting to have that ability? Because all of your books, of course, are forever progressing. But once we finish writing a book, you know, there's an end date until you do another whole printing. But with the app, it's evolving at all times. That's interesting.
Yes, and so, you know, I think a lot of us love books, but we are willing to embrace, you know, the future and the benefits that the technology offers us. So why not? I'm on board.
That's so true. That's a wonderful discussion about plant medicine. And we're going to take a little break right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. I want to remind you that we are speaking and very honored to be speaking with master herbalist Brigitte Mars. And find out more at BrigitteMars.com. We're going to go, when we come back from the break, more into depth about what you can find in her new book, which should be a must-have both on your shelf and in your backpack. If you're someone who spends a lot of time hiking or traveling, or if you have children or elderly parents, or if you live in a house, you know, any reason. And it is called The Natural First Aid Handbook. And we'll be right back with more right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z.
On this edition of The Natural Medicine Chest, we'll discuss the nutrient known as taurine.
Amino acids are chemical constituents that form the building blocks of protein in the body. The official definition of an amino acid is a compound which contains an amino group and a carboxylic acid. Taurine contains a sulfonic group instead, so is not a true amino acid, although it is often referred to as one. The intracellular concentration of taurine is 10 times that of any normal free amino acid.
Taurine was discovered in 1827, but the significance of taurine in nutrition was not realized until 1975, when the journal Science published a study showing that taurine-deficient cats suffered from retinal degeneration. In 1986, the Annual Review of Biochemistry reported that the amount of taurine present in mammalian milk depends on the species. Natural human mother's milk is rich in taurine, but cow's milk, except for the early milk known as colostrum, is taurine deficient. Pediatrics Journal in 1983 printed a study which outlined several of the biologically significant functions of taurine, and an effort was then made to fortify infant formula by adding taurine.
Some species of animals, such as cats, cannot synthesize taurine within their bodies, and so must receive it through their diets. Humans have a very limited ability to synthesize taurine, so adequate intake through diet and supplementation is important. The principal source of dietary taurine is meat of various types and shellfish. Even people ingesting sufficiently high levels of taurine may develop a deficiency due to the overgrowth of certain anaerobic intestinal microorganisms which consume taurine. Certain prescription drugs are known inhibitors of taurine uptake.
The Journal of Neurochemistry published a study in 1975 which showed that taurine concentrations are extremely high in the retina. In fact, the retina contains two binding proteins specific for taurine. Research has yet to determine exactly how taurine functions in the eye, but deficiency of taurine has been found to lead to the degeneration of photoreceptor cells. Continued studies on taurine have linked its presence to several biological functions, besides being a protector of the delicate tissues of the eye. Taurine helps to neutralize oxidizing agents caused by ionizing radiation. Taurine is present in high concentrations in the normal heart. It stimulates white blood cell motility and protects cell membranes from free radical damage. Taurine has proven useful in epileptics to reduce or control seizures. It helps modulate the transport of substances such as sodium, potassium, magnesium, copper, and iron across cell membranes. Additional research supports taurine's role in preventing gallstones.
So, as you can see, the nutrient taurine may be an important addition to your natural medicine chest.
Thank you.
Welcome back. Two more right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. Please get in touch at naturalnurse.com or Facebook, The Natural Nurse. We love to hear from you, and I get so excited when people all over the country, and I have to say the world, actually come up to me at on-ground events and say, I listen to you on radio all the time. That's just thrilling. One of those other ways that the new world has actually changed our concept of time and place. And today we are so happy to have as our guest Master Herbalist Brigitte Mars. And she teaches also internationally and at conferences all over the U.S. and the world, as well as the Mayo Clinic. And she blogs for the Huffington Post and has a long list of absolutely phenomenal and easy-to-use herbal information in book form, in app form. And now we're talking about her latest book, The Natural First Aid Handbook. So thank you so much for joining us today, Brigitte.
My pleasure, Ellen. Thank you.
I'd like you to consider coming sometime to the Florida Herbal Conference. It's every year. I always present there, and you would love it because it's sort of a more old-fashioned, like goes back to our early days, let's say, with American Herbalist Guild conferences.
Yes.
Because it's mostly an outside conference. It's at a beautiful campground. Almost 1,000 people come. It always sells out, and it's run by Emily Ruff, who's just a beautiful, young, up-and-coming herbalist. Perhaps you've met her. So it's something that we'd love to see you at. It's coming up this weekend, but think about it for next year, the Florida Herbal Conference. And
well,
by the
I'm
way, all of you listening
me.
To you, excuse me?
I'm going to hope they invite me. I would love
to
go
yeah,
there.
We'll get in touch. They certainly would. They certainly would. Just get in touch after, you know, because the conference is now, so you know how that goes with the planning phase. And unfortunately, they've had to turn away, you know, probably hundreds of people who want to go, so I don't know if they're going to look for a larger venue next year. Although people can still come if they're local. You can come for like a day or even come every day, but there's just no more cabins on the lake available. But in any event, I am looking forward to it, and that's this weekend, the Florida Herbal Conference. Now, in your book, The Natural First Aid Handbook, what made you come up with that concept?
Well, first aid is something you need to be prepared for, and you know, if you don't know what to do in an emergency situation, you could do the wrong thing, and it could result in permanent injury if you don't do the right thing, or loss of life. I mean, first aid is big, and anyone who's a parent who cares for the elderly, you need to think fast, and you need to be clear-headed when a crisis happens. So in my life, I've had a few, you know, emergency situations. Certainly raising children, there were many of them. I always say it's amazing children survive childhood, and sometimes they don't. But there's just so many calamities. They don't know what they're doing. They stick things in the light sockets. It's perilous. But, you know, I've had my house catch on fire. I've gotten bit by a copperhead snake. I've certainly been present at car accidents. And so knowing what to do, if you know what to do ahead of time, then you're going to be clear-headed and you'll be calmer and you can reassure the person who needs care. So I feel it's really important because if we are wanting to help heal people, sometimes being called into action on the spot is really going to be an opportunity to help someone get through the situation with minimal harm. And it might be stopping bleeding or what to do for an insect bite. It doesn't have to be life-threatening to be alarming.
That's true. And the way this book is laid out, The Natural First Aid Handbook, it's so quick and easy to use because it's, I guess the whole thing is alphabetical. So you can look up whatever thing, you know, like right next to each other you have stomach pain, which is something that almost everybody has experienced. And right after that, you have stroke, which, of course, is life-threatening.
It's true. And knowing, you know, what do we need to give the person? Do we need to give them more oxygen? Knowing that you're not supposed to give fluids to a person who's unconscious is really important. What to do if someone faints? When is fainting okay to treat at home, but also when is this condition to get medical attention? So natural first aid is not meant to replace competent medical care, certainly when needed, but it might also be what to do until you can get medical attention. But like one example I'll share is years ago I was with someone and they cut their hand, the palm of their hand, they were drilling and they were bleeding and freaking out and said, I've got to get to the emergency room. And I thought, like, well, we're going to have to get the neighbors to take us to the emergency room, but we don't want to get blood in their car. So I'm going to do what I know, and that is, this is going to sound crazy, but I went and sprinkled some cayenne pepper on the bleeding hand, and all of a sudden it stopped bleeding. And so rather than a bloody ride to the emergency room, which usually costs a lot more if you don't have insurance, and you often have to wait a long time, now you can proceed more calmly. It's like, okay, I'm not going to lose, you know, pints of blood by the time we get there. And maybe I don't need to deal with it as an emergency. I can, you know, put some salve on it and, bandage it properly and prevent infection and get care if needed. But it may just heal on its own because that is what the body usually wants to do if we can just support it.
But certainly the focus of your whole book, the layout of each little section, and the sections are, you know, in most cases pretty clear. And the first thing you absolutely have all over the place is seek immediate medical attention. But then there's always a waiting time, right? Like you said, you have to either wait for an ambulance or wait for someone to drive you, or, you know, maybe you're hiking somewhere where there ain't going to be no one coming anytime soon as well.
And, you know, a dear friend of mine, her father got stung by a bee in his mouth, and he died in 10 minutes while they were waiting for emergency medical care. And so, you know, would you know what to do in an emergency? Do you have some homeopathic remedies that maybe could have saved his life? So I think we just need to rise up and be ready to accept the challenge. And I'm so good, I'm so delighted that Story decided to include things like what to do to prepare your house. What if there's a flood? What if you have hurricane warnings? What would you grab if your house were on fire? You know, what are the things that would be most important? And also, you know, how to travel in good health. People will spend thousands of dollars to go on a trip and not be prepared for what do you do if you get diarrhea, if you get sick in a foreign country. And so a little preparation ahead of time can make a huge amount of difference, so that you are prepared, you have what you need. Maybe you've taken probiotics before your trip. Maybe you brought some essential oils with you that could be remedial, so you don't end up spending your vacation in a foreign hospital where there's a language barrier.
And plus, it's great, I think, if people go through and read the Natural First Aid Handbook, and that's by Brigitte Mars. The front cover is it's so easy to grab this book and read. You have household remedies, herbal treatments, and basic emergency preparedness. And I think you're right. Emergency preparedness is becoming a much more, let's say, recognized term, because as we move forward with the the gross changes to the climate, whether you think they are caused by man-made effects or not, I believe they are being exacerbated by that, but regardless, that's like a political discussion. No one can say they're not happening. Every part of the country now has what's called thousand-year events, only they happen every year, everywhere across the country. The biggest fires, the biggest winds, the biggest rains, the biggest snowstorms. You know, everyone knows that's happening. And what can you do to prepare So that is an excellent part of this book, The Natural First Aid Handbook.
And Ellen, one thing that you've probably seen is that when there's the warnings for the hurricanes or the floods or the tornadoes, the stores sell out of the necessities really quick.
That's true.
And so if you think like, oh, well, when we get the warning, we're going to go to the hardware store and buy the sump pump or the things to put over our windows or the water purification system, they could run out really quickly and not have any more for a long time. So being prepared, and we have seen a lot of emergencies all around the world, and I think this is our social duty. I also recently got certified as an emergency disaster relief person, so that if there is a calamity, we had a huge floodings in Boulder a few years ago, you know, we want to keep our heads on straight and be able to give care and assistance not only to our own families but our community, so that we come through this. And very often these disasters do bring out community efforts, and we all need to help one another, and I'd say that might be one of the positive things that come out of it, but we see how we're all really connected.
Yeah, that's definitely true. And there's some other great herbal groups, like there's a woman named Annie, and she's in Orlando, who is an EMT and an herbalist, and that's her specialty. In fact, she'll be at the Florida Herbal Conference manning the first aid booth. And she has both everything that you might need from a conventional medical perspective, as well as a full line of herbal remedies and homeopathics. And I think that reflects to good medical practice.
Absolutely. And, you know, one of the interesting jobs I've had over the past couple of years is being at different rock festivals like Envision Festival and Arise Festival. And at Envision, which is held in Costa Rica, they had a medical tent, but then they also had an herbal natural medicine tent, which you probably have heard of Seven Song, a wonderful herbalist from Ithaca, New York. So, you know, every day I would come in for a couple hours just to volunteer and help out, because a lot of people said, you know, I really want to treat this naturally, and here we are in the jungle, and let's see if this doesn't work. And it was really a wonderful thing to see how effective they were with very few resources. What could they do with calendula tea and peppermint tea and tea tree oil? And there's really a lot you can do with a few remedies. So it was really wonderful to see how Seven Song operates these little pop-up first aid booths, and they were always really busy.
Yes, and that's wonderful, but I want to see, because one of my life goals, being both a nurse and an herbalist, is bringing it more together and doing what's called best medicine, which in most cases is what we look at that is very effective with the lowest rate of adverse effects, and we can bring in the lowest cost as well, as first-line medicine in every situation, and where herbal medicine and homeopathics is integrated into what's called standard of practice. And then the pharmaceutical drugs are there when needed. For the next step, that's really my goal, because all of it is excellent when used appropriately. But because, again, of political reasons, there's an overemphasis on pharmaceuticals and surgery being the first and only thing available, when that is incorrect from a medically prudent viewpoint.
I am so with you on that, Ellen. It's really not us and them. And I am so grateful that we do live in a time where surgeries can be done, and babies that are not going to make it and mothers are going to survive because of modern technology. So really, if we would just put our heads and hearts together, we're going to see the best medicine possible.
That's the word.
Through. And
that's
someone
the word
like you doing
medicine.
Yeah.
And
your work,
book,
you know, incorporating
the
nursing
handbook is, it's really best medicine. Because, you know, you talk about life-saving measures, which sometimes have to be done at an emergency room if you can get there, but then rather than sit and twiddle your thumbs, like you talked about cayenne, that is a great one. I use that all the time. Even, you know, if my husband nips himself during shaving. Let's talk about cayenne again, because it's counterintuitive, but it works so well.
I know. Cayenne is like a paradox, because it'll stop bleeding, but it also improves circulation. And it can be warming, but it can also be cooling. So, you know, here in Colorado, some people put cayenne pepper between their shoes and their socks when they go skiing. But then if you consume cayenne in a really hot climate, it'll make you sweat, so you release heat and you actually feel cooler. So it is sort of a paradox, but it's also an herb that has been used for a threatened heart attack until medical attention can get there. People have taken a couple cayenne capsules or cayenne tincture. Now, this doesn't mean that you haven't already called 911 and an ambulance is on the way, but it's good to know, like, well, maybe there's something we can do until medical help gets here, because sometimes it could take a while depending on where you live. And we're so giving our health and the responsibility of our health to someone else. And I would like to see, you know, every household have a decent first aid kit and be schooled in what to do in an emergency. Every teacher, every parent, and even, you know, children should learn these things. My daughter Sunflower and I did an herb camp for kids, and one of the children sprained his ankle, and all the kids went and collected plantain leaves, and we shredded them up and mixed them with water and did a poultice. It's so easy, even a child could do it, and we elevated his foot. And of course, later on that day, he went and got checked out, and the inflammation was reduced, and he was fine. But being able to take action in the moment is so important and helps to keep everybody calm. So cayenne would be a great remedy to have. But there are other things you can use for bleeding, such as yarrow leaves, shepherd's purse. Do you know that even spider webs, you probably know this, Ellen, even spider webs, as long as there's not a spider on there, could be applied to a wound to stop bleeding.
Yes, and that's a wonderful matrix. In fact, I've used those things together in the field, a spider web and cayenne powder. And that cayenne powder, people think it's going to burn. I would say, having used it myself in an open wound, it has a little tingle for a second or so, but then it coagulates everything. And another thing to use it for, while you're at it, gardeners, is sprinkle it on any plant that you don't want bugs or squirrels to bother, but you don't want to use a poison.
And it's antimicrobial and high in vitamin C, and it's something you can find almost everywhere in the world. So when traveling, you might find that eating the hot, spicy food is going to help protect you from parasites and pathogens that might cause digestive distress. So it's a great ally.
So balanced. And we'll talk about more when we come back. We have one more little break right here to identify the station, which, by the way, is Progressive Radio Network. And talking about apps, I want you to know you can download now from any app store Progressive Radio Network app, and then you can listen to our show, The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z, live every Wednesday from 10 to 11 a.m. But perhaps better yet, you can hear it anytime, day or night, anywhere in the world on the app, as well as on the downloads. We have both at Progressive Radio Network. We have them also at naturalnurse.com. And it's so nice to see the words getting out, Brigitte, because we really have, you know, over 300,000 downloads of our shows. So it's really exciting to see how far and wide our herbal message is spreading. We'll be right back with more with Brigitte Mars. Look at her website, meanwhile, and right here on Progressive Radio Network and The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z.
Yeah, I'm not known as a gadget guy, but I love gadgets that really do the trick, like the new app. The Progressive Radio Network has an app, thanks to our friends at Audio Now. Hey, this is Mark Farrell, host of Insight on Thursdays at 11 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, where we broadcast live out of New York City. But if you can't catch the show live, no frets. It's always archived. It's always on the app. Download it now, listen later, whenever you want. The Progressive Radio Network app is available from our friends at Audio Now. Check it out. We'll be right back.
This is Ellen Kamai, the natural nurse.
And Dr. Z, Eugene Zamperone, licensed naturopathic physician. We're both authors, medical school professors, and natural health practitioners with decades of experience.
Join us to discover the latest true and tested information about natural medicine, how to take care of yourself and your family naturally and avoid the downward health spiral linked to the overuse of pharmaceutical drugs.
Explore ancient indigenous herbal healing, natural foods, homeopathy, and the mind-body interlude. Learn the real deal. Natural medicine is supported by scientific inquiry.
Lots of ways to listen. For instance, live or archived. You can listen to The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z every Tuesday from 10 to 11 a.m. Eastern Time, right here on Progressive Radio Network, PRN.FM, or anytime by visiting PRN.FM, click Archives, and scroll to The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z.
Or you can call in on our private listener line at 701-719-0884, or go to your favorite app store and download the Progressive Radio Network app. Listen live or to the archives anytime. Until next time, we both hope you stay healthy.
PRN. Progressive Radio Network.
Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. Find us at naturalnurse.com and find our wonderful guest, Brigitte Mars, at BrigitteMars.com. And I'm sure she has a Facebook page and all those things as well. And we're talking today about her book, The Natural First Aid Handbook. You know, Brigitte, down here in Florida, I'm sure you know, I don't think it's an issue in Colorado, but mosquitoes are, you know, spreading things like Zika. And really, people are sometimes freaked out, and then they don't want to use DDT because that is a highly toxic chemical to spray on your skin. So what would the Natural First Aid Handbook say to do for keeping bug bites away?
Well, there's many things, and yes, mosquitoes are a problem. So, of course, you want to minimize standing water, you know, whether there's old tires or bird baths or even, you know, pet food bowls that are outside that might be breeding grounds for mosquitoes. It's good to know that mosquitoes don't like the taste of people that eat garlic. So taking garlic capsules or including more diet, dietary garlic, would be a good idea. And of course, rather than using DEET, which has been found to contribute to neurological damage, you certainly don't want to be putting that all over your body all the time. There's so many essential oils that could be used, and they could be diffused in the air. They could be made into a spray and put on your body, on your hair, on your clothing. So essential oils, things like citronella and eucalyptus, geranium, catnip, there's so many of them, and they smell really good. And again, you're supporting fields of flowers growing, things like lavender is another one that works, tea tree oil. So that's certainly a good idea. It's also been found that mosquitoes seem to like the color blue, maybe because they're looking for blue veins to poke into. So those are a few things to try. And, you know, I really think that you can learn to not be mosquito bait. I have not had a mosquito bite in over, I think, probably in over 40 years. I did some kind of Jedi mind trick where I really, like, tried to communicate with the bugs and saying, I am not bug food. I respect you. I want to say, I know this sounds out there, but I think you can really strengthen your energy shield. It also seems that the bugs are attracted to people that maybe eat a lot of sugar. So That could be another thing to change in the diet. And they also tend not to like people that have a good amount of B vitamins in their system. So adding some nutritional yeast or a B vitamin complex might be another way to make you less appetizing to those pesky bugs. And then, you know, if you get a mosquito bite, a really simple remedy is to make a little paste of baking soda and apple cider vinegar and put it on there. Soak in the bathtub to which you've added a pound of baking soda. And then you can also dot on the affected area, the itchy spot, some lavender or tea tree oil or a combination of the two. Yes, but I know mosquitoes are certainly not my favorite creature on the planet.
Unfortunately, you know, just in terms of, again, what they're doing for it here in Florida, unfortunately, they have now released genetically modified mosquitoes. We fought against that for years, but now, you know, as all regulations are being completely eliminated, the regulation that was holding back on releasing genetically modified mosquitoes has been rescinded, and they did go ahead and release thousands of them, which I think is treacherous, and we'll hear about the negative effects of it in years to come when they figure out what they are. So that's unfortunate, but nonetheless, to have in your natural medicine chest some of these wonderful remedies that Brigitte shared with us, like citronella oil, I really do find works great. You just have to keep putting it on if you're, you know, out hiking and you're sweaty.
Right, and it's a type of lemongrass. And, you know, another thing to know when you're hiking, and this is a place where the iPlant phone app can come in, like if, let's say you didn't have essential oils with you, and I think if you're to have three essential oils with you all the time, I would say tea tree, lavender, and peppermint, because you can treat so many different things with those three essential oils. But you can also find aromatic plants that are growing, like artemisia or lemongrass or catnip, and then just rub them on your skin, and the oils will go onto your skin, and that can work as well. Another reason why it's good to know the names of some of the plants around you, because you could have remedies right there. And our ancestors, you know, what do? They sometimes would put mud or clay on their bodies to repel bugs. Yes, we know these bugs can carry disease, but there are things that we can do, and I know wearing mud is not going to be a great way to go to work, but essential oils are definitely a wonderful part of the plan, and you don't have to use that many of them. They can be diluted greatly and used. So we do have remedies here, and every time we buy a natural remedy, we're supporting farmers and wildcrafters and the bee population, and we want to do that. We need to be part of the solution.
Yeah, that's a very good point, the environmental and ecological aspects. Now, I know I just had Rosemary Gladstar on, I think, 2 weeks ago, too. And, of course, she has Plant Savers, which is a great organization. And she does talk about the overuse of plants at times. But by using plants as medicine, I think it builds consciousness about how important it is to really represent them in an environmentally and ecologically friendly way that propagates their growth.
Absolutely. And I'm a member of United Plant Savers, and I think it's a wonderful group. And I would also like to encourage everyone to think about growing some of these things, you know, turning your lawn into more edible and medicinal plants, because we're currently using about a third of our nation's water to water grass. And that might have been a cool thing to do in the early 1900s, but when we see so many areas faced with drought, if we're going to be watering something, it really should be something that we can either eat or use for medicine, or that serves some function rather than something we just need to mow, because that's another eco-disaster.
Right. What about, and also dumping all kinds of high nitrogen chemicals and greening agents and glyphosate and, you know, just it goes on and on. We just seem to be, when I say we, I don't mean you and I, but the environment of how we live on the planet, especially in areas like the United States and suburban areas, is so out of balance. It's just mind-blowing, truthfully.
It's true. And, you know, there's not a lot of time to change things. I think the time is over. Like, we need to do more studies and more research. We know how this is going. And, you know, a book that I really love, Ellen, you might have read it, but The Fifth Sacred Thing by Starhawk.
Oh, it's one of my favorite books.
It's a wonderful book. And she has a new one out that I would recommend called City of Refuge.
I'm writing it down. Thank you.
City of Refuge. And these books are really prophetic, and they also have a plan about what can we do when so much of the planet is maybe contaminated and there's water shortages. But we need to prepare ourselves now. And even though we might be warm and comfortable and well-fed in our homes, there's a lot of people on the planet that aren't. And you can see that things can change at any time. Let's do what we can and use our resources reasonably and sustainably and know what to do in an emergency and be prepared and have, be able to think calmly. And, you know, one of the things that I've been telling my daughter, I have a daughter who lives in L.A., and she, you know, recently felt an earthquake. And, I said, so if there was a bad earthquake, what would you do? And she said, well, Mom, we have lots of beans in the house. And I said, yeah, and beans take several hours to cook. I mean, is that really going to be the answer? What if you didn't have fuel for a few weeks? We know that people in Puerto Rico are still without electricity. So I'm a big believer in having some chia seeds, because all you need to do is soak them in water, and you could flavor them with wild greens or berries or nuts. And it's a high protein, high omega-3, vitamin E, zinc, many, many good things. And that's a really easy food that could be a good thing to have a few extra pounds of in your home. It's also
a
great
thank
travel
you, Brigitte, food. And I want people to know we're talking to you, Brigitte Mars at BrigitteMars.com, and we're going to be going off the air in a minute. Time flew, but we're talking about her book, The Natural First Aid Handbook, which you do have, Household Remedies, Herbal Treatments. You have a lot of homeopathy in here, too, and
yes.
Basic Emergency Preparedness, exactly what we're going out with that topic. Very important. Everyone should know. So get this little book, have it on your shelf, go through it, and get some of these remedies for the day that you need it. That's the idea of being prepared for first aid. And any closing comments, Brigitte, to our audience?
Ellen, thank you so much. Many blessings to you. And yes, you said it, be prepared. That's what we learned in, scouting when we were younger, and it's still a good idea.
Well, thank you so
much. Many blessings.
And until next time, audience, as always, on behalf of myself and Dr. Eugene Zamperone, your host here at The Natural Nurse, and Dr. Z, we hope that you stay healthy.